Somebody's got like gun footage. So we got your seeing eye dog license plates. This one's for.
Okay, we will call the committee to order. This is the Transportation and Public Safety Committee meeting of Wednesday, February 20th, 2013. Members, we have four bills on the agenda today. Everyone whose name begins with D. So, actually three bills, I'm sorry. We have three bills and one presentation. So we'll start with Senate File 368, Senator Dahl. Quorum is present, so we're good to go. And Senator Dahl, please proceed how you will.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, and it's always good to be before your committee. I have Senate File 368, and this is a bill that comes from the Minnesota Driver and Traffic Safety Education Program. And I do want to mention that I do have the A2 amendment that puts the bill in the form that I would like it to be.
Senator Dahl, this is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction in your first
Correct,
hearing?
Mr. Chair.
Okay,
that's
so
right.
This will be an author's amendment. Senator Kent moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed no. Motion passes.
And just a little explanation on the amendment. It just puts the bill, when creating task force, it puts it in the form that the Senate typically likes to see. And then the reason it's A2 is because we just added a date since our A1, so that is in the order that we would like it. By the way, give you a little bit of background about myself. I've been a driver education instructor myself since 1982. I taught for 2 years in Iowa, and then the last 28 years here in Minnesota. And what the bill does, basically, a couple of things. One of those, it provides for concurrent education, concurrent teaching in driver ed. What does that mean? That means currently in Minnesota, when you teach driver's ed, you have to take the class, the 30 hours of classroom. You get a permit, and once you get a permit, then you are allowed to take behind-the-wheel instruction. In Minnesota, we do require 6 hours of behind-the-wheel instruction. And during the 6 months that you're required to have, if you're under 19, you get your 6 hours completed, and then you're able to take a road test once you do turn 16. What concurrent teaching would allow, basically, as the language says here, the amendment says, has completed the classroom phase of instruction in the driver ed program or has completed 15 hours of classroom instruction in a program that presents classroom and behind-the-wheel instruction concurrently. So what we're hoping to accomplish here is if they have at least 15 hours of the classroom, they would then be able to do the 6 hours of behind-the-wheel during the other 15 hours. So you'd basically have the classroom instruction as part of your day, and you could actually apply what you learn that afternoon in that second phase of the classroom instruction. So it's really, when I taught driver education in Iowa, we actually did the classroom in the morning and we did the behind the wheel in the afternoon. It's kind of like, you know, think of some other examples of teaching facts, family and consumer sciences. You know, you talk and talk and talk about cooking and so forth, but you actually probably get to practice it that same day as well. So this is something that most states offer, and I can maybe offer my testifier here, Joe Christensen, in a minute to talk more about it. Secondly, this bill would create a novice driver education improvement task force to ensure that driver education programs in Minnesota meet the standards established by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And the standards here, we're trying to just to become a little bit more uniform in terms of the what we require of our teen drivers here in Minnesota. You know, the number one killer of young persons in nationwide and in Minnesota by far is traffic accidents. So we certainly need to take our driver education program seriously, and in terms of what we're actually doing in the classroom and behind the wheel, we certainly need to take that very seriously as well. The task force and who would be on that is laid out pretty well. I don't know if you have the handout or not, but I can just allude to it. It kind of gives you some recommend or ideas of a brief outline of the national standards, some of which we do not do in this state. Among them are 10 hours of behind-the-wheel instruction. I believe it's 45 hours of classroom. But there are a number of things that other states, other novice driver education programs are doing. It would be up to the task force to look at, are there any recommendations there that we need to do that kind of show best practices among the 50 states to ensure that we are making sure that our young drivers are the safest drivers on our public roads, streets, and highways. So I think I'll allow Mr. Christensen to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about what we're trying to do today.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Joe Christensen. I have taught driver education for the last 40 years. I'm representing MTSIA. I'm chair of the legislative committee. And thank you, Chair and Senators, for having me here.
Thank you.
Anything you want to add?
Senator Dahl has pretty well covered everything here. Minnesota is the only state that does not allow concurrent driver education. Many states require it, such as Iowa, and it is the best practice. Minnesota used to allow it, and I have used it in my classroom, my driver ed program, and it was a great way to teach, but somehow that disappeared from the law a few years ago. And Minnesota has been a leader in driver education in the past. ATSEA, the National Association, has had 50 presidents in the last 50 years, and six of those have been from Minnesota. Actually, Minnesota was the first state to have driver education at Gilbert High School, Gilbert, Minnesota. So we've been a leader. And recently, we've been falling behind. And the national standards were written by people of all different kinds of backgrounds to try to see what we could do as a nation. And they were published in 2009. And I think it's time for Minnesota to look at them and either say, yes, let's do it, or let's try this much, or forget about it. So,
thank questions. You. Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Any questions from the committee? Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I just have one quick one. So, Senator Dahl, would you see students being able to complete this process quicker by allowing this to happen? Or
Senator Dahl?
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Christensen, correct me. You know, especially is in the smaller school districts when they have, like, maybe one instructor and, you know, they have maybe probably coaching as well, that, you know, you have so many months to try to get X number of students done. And so you got your 30 hours of classroom, and then you're trying to also find, well, 30 times 6, you can do the math, that you're trying to get those people. So, you know, you usually don't have more than 3 hours of a classroom setting in a day anyway. It's just a good way to utilize the afternoon. But even more importantly, so yes to your question, but even more importantly, it really does give that, you know, connecting the classroom content to some real application right away.
All right. Further questions from the committee? Is there Senator Wieger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dahl. I support your bill and appreciate that. When I was looking at the requirements for a permit, it made me reflect that we basically think these are students that are in school. And I know some states have said that if you're not in school, you're not going to be issued a permit. I know that's not the issue before us, but since we're reviewing the pre-emancipation, pre-graduation ability to get that license, I'm wondering how you would feel if there was a clause that said One of the conditions is that a person, if they're 15, 16, or 17, has graduated or is enrolled in public, private, or homeschool, thus meaning that they have not dropped out.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, that's would be quite of a leap. I certainly we want all the hooks that we can in our young people to try to keep them in school. I've even had people come up to me and suggest grade point averages for maintaining licensure. But obviously homeschool students would be considered in school as well. I don't know. I think I welcome the discussion in the future. I think it might be something that even the task force would we would compel them to look at in terms of tying driver education, getting a license or permit to staying in school. Does that satisfy you?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll continue that conversation, and the intent is to be constructive. And
yep.
Members, this bill will go from here if the committee agrees that it's a good idea and wants to move the bill along. I don't want to presume anything.
Mr. Chair?
So if it's passed, it'll go from here to state and local government, and then it's going to come back here. It'll go from here to finance and then come back here for the money parts. You notice the blank appropriations, the blank appropriation and blank reference to some random fund. Not the Trunk Highway Fund, I notice. I'm happy to see that. And so we'll have another crack at it. Senator Senjum.
Oh, thank you. And perhaps a little bit unrelated as well, but as long as Senator Wieger started this little course of action, why? And I don't need a lengthy answer. More just curious, does a student, whatever age they might be, taking public driver education have to be able to either speak and or write English?
Senator Dahl, huh? You're picking up a lot of issues on your bill here.
No, Mr. Chair, no, that's not a requirement. Matter of fact, they can take, I believe, the written exam in different languages.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, however, obviously they do have to complete the, unless they're 18, they do have to take the 30 hours of classroom and the 6 hours behind the wheel. And usually it's teachers of English speakers that are qualified and trained. We actually have a shortage of driver's ed teachers, but we don't have a lot of language, multilingual right. Teachers in terms of driver education.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Dahl, are you going to be picking up the online driver's ed idea as an amendment?
Mr.
I'm just
Chair,
kidding. You don't have to answer.
I
thought we'd load up your bill here with
don't
a lot of good
Joe
ideas.
Over here.
Okay. Well, Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, I just as a senior driver now, mature driver, I believe Senator Senjum, a few of us would qualify when you get a 10% premium
Mr.
discount.
Mr. Chair, I'm still learning, according to a lot of people.
But there's some very excellent online programs that through AAA Minnesota Safety Council and others have available and
for seniors, Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And perhaps non-seniors could enroll as well.
Mm-hmm. Maybe someone's got a bill. Maybe
$20 and it's a 10% discount.
It's the first year in a long time I've been around here. I haven't heard that bill or even seen it. Although I think it's a bit of a dead letter. I remember there's someone up in the corner office who's not crazy about it. So, all right. So members, anything further? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify? Ms. McCormick, please come forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And DVS supports the concepts in this bill and in this amendment. The concern we would have would be the effective date for Section 1, which is January 1st, 2014. We believe we would need at least till June of that year in order for us to be able to do some exempt rulemaking so that we could ensure that we had determined which 15 hours of classroom instruction would be allowed because we believe there are certain sections that all students would need before they start doing the behind the wheel. And so our concern would be that we would be given enough time to be able to get the rulemaking done. And we don't believe we could get it done by January 1st of 2014. So that would be the only concern that we have. We appreciate the fact that we have a good representative task force that would be established to look at all the issues. We certainly think that we can work with this, but we do believe that, and we're glad to see we have the commercial drivers, driving instructors and schools instructors included in this. That would be our only concern, is that we believe we need a little bit more time in order to get those standards in place.
Ms. McCormick, can you just illuminate the committee when you use the expression exempt rulemaking? What does that mean? I kind of know, but I forget. And I'm sure other people need a refresher on what that means as well.
Well, the exempt rulemaking, and I haven't done any for a few years, but it is a more... you usually have an agreement with the rules that you don't have a substantial amount of, you have everybody kind of working collaboratively, so you have an agreement and you don't have to necessarily have the hearings that you have to have if you get rules that you can put out for notice. Nobody disagrees with the rules, and so as a result you're able to move forward with them without the hearing process, which sometimes can take more time. I may not be using the correct word, but I remember it from several years ago when we had to go through a lengthy rulemaking process. We tried the exempt process, and it didn't work. And so obviously, we would think if we narrowed it just to deal with that issue.
Ms. McCormick, a question occurs to me. Not from my own brain. Do you know if you need specific authority to be able to undergo the exempt rulemaking process versus the regular rulemaking process?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure we may need that authority to make sure that we don't have a challenge to it. That would be probably, I think if we, that would be... because I hadn't seen this amendment, I would have talked to our rules coordinator before I came, but since okay. I just saw the amendment now, we're just reacting quickly to it just so that we could at least address that issue. I know that it'll be going through other committees, so we could try and take care of it in that respect.
Well, and state and local has kind of authority and jurisdiction over rules and rules issues, so Senator Dahl, if you could work with the agency to figure that question out and have that language included if need be. Senator Dahl, how do you respond to the issue of the effective date?
Mr. Chair, we're fine with changing that now to June 1st, 2014, to help out. And then we can still want to address her other issues, of course.
Senator Wieger, do you mind making the motion to change the word January on 3.21? Of the A2 amendment to June?
So moved.
All in favor of the Uyghur amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Anything further, committee? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chairman. In regards to this is a delete all amendment. The prior one had, I think, $200,000, and maybe that's been covered already. Is that just deleted? On the other hand, I see in line 318 just a blank appropriation.
Correct. Senator Kiffmeyer, the route of this bill will be to go to state and local government to deal with this this matter of the rules and this task force, and then it will be referred back to finance and come back to us, where hopefully we will have figured out the money and the fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the other question I have is the appropriation was very broad authority, any necessary rulemaking to grants and so on, some administrative costs and so on. So is that going to be addressed there as well, or will that come back to us?
Thanks. I presume a fiscal note will be prepared for our benefit when we hear the bill again, when we're in finance committee mode. And so we'll understand what the costs are. The agency, of course, will develop the fiscal note in conjunction with MMB. And if we need to narrow the scope of the appropriation, we can do that. One thing that we're not going to do, Senator Dahl knows, is we're not going to take it out of the Trunk Highway Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's good news indeed. But I know that rulemaking usually can be regular. There's no statutory reference. So just a few other things that if it's others probably in that committee will pick it up as well.
Great, great. Anyone else in the audience like to testify on Senate File 368? Nope. Okay. Who would like to move Senate File 368 as amended and recommended to pass and referred to state and local government? Senator Wieger, you look interested.
Yes.
All right.
I would so move.
Thank All right. To the Senator Wieger's motion, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Thank you,
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and committee.
All right. Next we have discussion of bicycling. We're going to hear a report from representatives of the City of Minneapolis about bicycle and motorist accidents. And Senator Dietzick, as this is a prelude to two bills from Senator Dietzick. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Wirtjes, Mr. Murphy. Senator Dietzick, proceed as you would wish.
Steve, we would like to start with the presentation.
And members, you see a report looks like this in your packet. And a handout.
Yeah.
It looks like this is a summary. And then a one-sheet page that's kind of a summary of the report.
Thank you, members. I have with me John Wirtjes, who is the Director of Traffic and Parking Services for the City of Minneapolis, and Sean Murphy, who I've talked to numerous times and used his name numerous times but never actually met before. And he is the Bike and Pedestrian Coordinator from the City of Minneapolis. And I will turn it over to John to start the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzick. My name is John Wirtjes. I'm the Director of Traffic and Parking Services at the City of Minneapolis. And I think most of you know
Mr. Wirtjes, can you move your microphone a little closer? Thanks.
A little bit closer? Okay.
Yeah.
I think you all are aware that our pedestrians and our bicyclists are our most vulnerable users on the roadway system. And so with that, Minneapolis, along with other agencies, are spending a lot of time looking through and spending hard-earned efforts trying to study and improve safety for those vulnerable users. One element that we've been doing at Minneapolis is to look at the data and examine that to see what that's really telling us. With that, we've done a thorough analysis of our bicycle crashes, and I've brought along Mr. Sean Murphy, who will kind of give us an overview and summary of that study.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sean Murphy, and I'm the Bicycle and Pedestrian Coordinator for the City of Minneapolis. Each of you has a two-page handout in front of you called Understanding Bicyclist Motorist Crashes in Minneapolis, and that's the one that I'm going to be hitting a few of what I believe to be are the more important points off this two-pager. Because bicycling is a more popular form of transportation, not only in Minneapolis as a city, but also in Minnesota as a state compared to other cities and states around the country. As Mr. Ward just mentioned, we took a look at a lot of our data so that we could figure out what's causing the crashes that are happening and what we can be doing to improve safety. So we took a look at 3,000 accident reports that were filed with the State Department of Public Safety, and these crashes happened between a bicycle and a motor vehicle, and this was between the years 2000 and 2010, so these happened over an 11-year period in Minneapolis. The analysis found that the crashes are complex events and that there's no one factor that contributes to crashes, but at the same time, we were able to draw three primary conclusions out of the report. One was that most crashes are occurring at intersections and on busy streets with a lot of traffic. The second was that motorists are not yielding, are not seeing or yielding to bicyclists when they are the contributing factor for a crash. And alternatively, bicyclists are not riding in a predictable manner when they are the ones who are contributing to a crash. I'm going to go into a little bit more detail of those 3 points I just made on the backside. But before I do that, we are using these findings to inform the development of how we do education, enforcement, and bicycle-related infrastructure. And the one piece of really good news, I'd say, that comes out of this report, besides just being more educated about what's leading to these crashes, is that we're not finding that bicycle crashes are going up because we've seen an increase in bicyclists. We're actually finding that the crashes are going down, at least the crash rate. The number of crashes that we've seen over the past 11 years have stayed steady at about 300 a year in Minneapolis in that 11-year period. But at the same time, our number of commuters has about doubled. And so we've seen the crash rate fall twofold. So it's much safer in Minneapolis to be riding your bicycle than it was back at the beginning of the decade, of the last decade. So the chart on the bottom of the first page illustrates that point. Especially that you'll see a dotted yellow line that shows the crash rate dropping. On the second page of the report, I mentioned before that both motorists and bicyclists were contributing to crashes. The bar graph in the upper right-hand corner illustrates about how much each party is responsible, and it's almost identical. Bicyclists are the contributing factor in about 59% of crashes, and motorists 64%. And the reason that adds up to more than 100 is because sometimes it's two parties at fault. It's not just one person in the same crash. As far as motorists failing to yield the right-of-way, you can see in the bar graph that's gray on the left-hand column, that is definitely far and above the highest contributing factor compared to other things like a driver being inattentive or using the wrong lane or running a stoplight. And on the far bottom of the page, failure to yield the right-of-way can be a little bit ambiguous sometimes, so we included some pictures of the types of turns that motorists take at intersections and the locations that bicyclists are coming from when they're making those turns. So on the lower left-hand side, you'll see left turns of a motorist and when they're not yielding to a bicyclist, where the bicyclist might be. And then on the lower right-hand corner, you'll see right turns in the same manner. The gray bar graph in the right-hand column, sort of in the middle of the page, shows that bicyclists are failing to yield the right-of-way when they're contributing, disregarding traffic signals like running stoplights, and riding against traffic. So because there are so many different factors that bicyclists are contributing, whereas motorists are usually failing to yield the right-of-way, but bicyclists are doing all sorts of things, we group that under the category of not being predictable, riding in an unpredictable manner. Mr. Chair, that's the conclusion of
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Summary. Questions, members? Oh, you covered it, Mr. Murphy. Thank you. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Weger.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I saw one statistic about impaired bicyclists, 5.9 or 6% involved for crashes. Are they issued a citation if that's the case?
Driving under the, or biking under the influence?
Yes, in an accident.
I don't know. Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Weger, the state statute, as far as I'm aware, only includes motorized vehicles in Minnesota. And bicyclists would be a non-motorized vehicle, so I'm not sure that
although, Mr. Murphy, I do know that we have a law on the books that says bicyclists have all the rights and responsibilities
yeah.
motorized vehicles when using the roadways. don't know what that means exactly, but I would presume it would mean that you need to be not intoxicated to a level above 0.08 when you're riding a bike. Senate Counsel, do you know the answer to this question? It's an excellent question.
Mr. Chair and members, I didn't realize that the question was just about driving under the influence, but in terms of other traffic regulations, a person who's operating a bicycle has to follow all of the applicable traffic regulations insofar as they can apply to a bicyclist. As far as DWI, I guess I'd have to look into that because under traffic regulations, it's a petty misdemeanor, and I don't know how bicycling under the influence would be penalized under the statute without checking into it.
All right. Well, if you could do that, The committee would love to have that information.
Mr. Chair would. Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmond.
I can give a partial answer to that. I actually have a city that arrested a gentleman for driving under the influence in a Segway.
Uh-huh.
Went all the way up through the court system, and they threw it out because it was not considered a motorized vehicle. And I would suspect you will find that bicycles will fall to the same level because they said it was a pedestrian type of thing. And unfortunately, the city wants me to find legislation that will get them for a DWI on a Segway. So maybe I want to talk to you about that.
But in that bill, Senator Osmond, I guarantee you will hear it.
Good segue.
And then we'll have the Segway community show up. It'll be Segway Day.
Segway into the Segway.
Yes, exactly. Senator Kippar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question I have on your report on page 27. It shows the four types of transportation cyclists. I think it's funny. You're strong and fearless, enthused but confident. Nice descriptions. Did you correlate those four categories into who had the more accidents or the more serious ones? Was there any correlation, did you find?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, we did not correlate the type of bicyclist to the crashes that were happening. The chart that you're referring to on page 27 is a survey of people as a whole in a similar city to ours, not actually in Minneapolis, but it just describes the type of people bicycling. The Department of Public Safety crash reports that our police officers fill out and submit to the state of Minnesota don't have any information on the type of person riding the bicycle and their skill level, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only reason why I bring it up is that I was looking at this as a solution basis. If you have no way, no how, never biked before, how can you reach them to educate them? Pretty hard to know who's going to all of a sudden pick up a bike. Same thing, but, you know, I know that the ABATE community has a tremendous educational effort, but they kind of have something that goes with it to enable their reaching their members. I know this is a hard thing for you to reach, but I thought that was interesting, but thank you.
Senate Council has more information. Ms. Berzofsky.
Mr. Chair, so the statutes on driving while impaired specifically apply to a motor vehicle. So an ordinary bicycle, though, can still be regulated under Traffic Regulations Chapter 169. And things like reckless driving and careless driving that are sometimes catch-all or fallback enforcement provisions when another specific regulation does not apply would apply to an operator of a bicycle. It's any person who operates or halts any vehicle on a street or highway in a careless or reckless manner is guilty of a misdemeanor. So it isn't only motor vehicles when it comes to careless and reckless.
And Ms. Berzofsky, how does that sentence, I've seen it, so I know it exists, that sentence that was included in the statutes a number of years ago now that says that bicyclists using the roadways have all the rights and responsibilities of motorized vehicles. How does that interact with the DWI laws and the other motorized vehicle laws?
Mr. Chair, it's that statement that you're referring to applies only to Chapter 169, specifically limited to 169, which is traffic regulations.
All right.
169A is the DWI chapter, and so it does not apply to that.
I see. Thank you. Anything further on the report, members? What I found most interesting is you look at on the front page of the summary sheet, and you see, and Mr. Murphy pointed this out, how much bicycling has increased, and the crash ratio and how that has decreased at the same time. That inverse relationship is I think really, really interesting, and I can attest I bike quite a bit myself, just not for recreational purposes, but to get where I need to go. And it does feel like to me, both with the development of on-street facilities, marking lanes and signage and that sort of thing, as well as just greater numbers of bicyclists, that drivers, at least in my community, just have a greater awareness. I do agree with the findings, though. A lot of my fellow bicyclists are irresponsible and don't stop and kind of slip through intersections pretty quickly and weave in and out and are unpredictable. And I know the bicycling advocacy community is trying really, really hard to get a handle on that. Anything further on the report, members? Okay, well, Senator Disick, why don't we move on to your bills?
Thank you.
Start with?
Probably for Senate File 414.
414, all right.
So I have two bills here relating to bike safety, and thank you for hearing these bills, and thank you to my co-author, Senator Dibble. I'll give a short summary first. So the first bill prohibits parking in a bike lane, and the second bill clarifies when cars can cross into bike lanes. These two bills are probably not the most pressing issue that you will hear about this year and probably not the most exciting, but bike safety is a big issue. Near University of Minnesota in Augsburg, areas where I represent, biking and walking are the easiest way to get around. Parking is hard to find and expensive. And many students and many others, like our chair and myself, don't just bike for recreation. It is a mode of transportation. And as we just heard about in the presentation, in the metro area, we have a mix of cars and bikes and pedestrians. We need to have these discussions to reduce fatal crashes between cars and bikes and cars and pedestrians. Reducing and eliminating fatalities is the big issue. It is a public safety issue. It's an important issue, and that's why I'm here today. So the first bill is Senate File 414. It amends the traffic regulations by adding a clause to prohibit parking in a designated bike lane except when posted signs permit parking. So when cars are parked in a bike lane, it causes the bikers to move in around the car and into the traffic lane. This is a risk because the biker is moving into the traffic lane and they're coming out possibly from behind another car, and so the car in the traffic lane may not see them. So it's much safer for the biker to just drive straight ahead in the bike lane if there's no cars parked in the bike lane. I've had some discussions with concerned citizens about snow piles because we're in Minnesota, so you have... You know, if we don't park curb to curb, and even when you, or we don't plow curb to curb, even when you do plow curb to curb, if we have a lot of snow, the snow melts and it builds up, and so you can't park right up against that curb. And so I have had discussions with the city to make sure that as we get a lot of snow, and so the snow and ice melt get bigger, and so the car can't park right up against to the curb, if there is a place where there is parking permitted and a bike lane next to that, that as the snow comes into the lane and the car parking may have to park more into the lane, that they do not get a ticket. So that alleviated a lot of concern for some of my constituents. The League of Minnesota Cities and the Metro Cities support this bill, and MnDOT has no objections to it. So are there any questions?
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dedzic, quick question, and I'm thinking more of, you're thinking of the standalone bike lanes where you've got room between the lane and the curb. I'm thinking in some suburban areas where you've got the bike lane set from the outside to the curb and the curb's not marked as a no parking zone. There's maybe not signs specifically saying parking permitted. A reasonable driver would then expect to be able to park in that section. Would this bill then make that illegal?
If it is marked as
Senator
a bike lane, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, if it is marked as a bike lane, then it would prohibit parking, is my understanding.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question, and being new to the Senate and having been a local official, why do we need this in state statute versus allowing individual communities to set their own regulations and statutes?
Senator Dietzick or Senate Council can help too.
I have my thoughts, but Mr. Chair, I will ask the Senate Council if she has an example or a rationale.
So, Ms. Berezovsky, did you understand the question? Why statute and not just local authority?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, it could be done by local authority. The 169.04 states the areas in which local jurisdictions are allowed to adopt ordinances that might not be consistent statewide, and regulating the standing or parking of vehicles is allowed to local authorities. The state obviously can preempt that and legislate for a statewide law, which is what the effect of this would be if it's passed.
Okay. Anything further, committee? Also, members, I just would mention to you, Senator Dietzick, sorry, these handouts are mislabeled. So if you wanted to read a little bit more with pictures, the one that says Senate File 415 should be 414, which is discussing right now. Senator Tomasoni.
Can I have an explanation? Because there's a bicycle lane as we drive out of the Capitol here and head downtown. And at the and just before you get to the right turn to go over to the Kelly Inn, there is no bicycle lane now. The line is not there anymore. Is that still considered to be a bicycle lane when the car gets there? Because it seems to me I pull alongside those cars all the time and then make a right. How is that considered in this particular bill?
Well, we'll suspend that question. I think that has to do with the next bill. We're talking about parking right now. Next bill, we'll talk about moving.
Well, I'm reading the wrong one. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're on Senate File 414, and that's about parking. Senator Dietzick, I do have a question. I didn't quite understand, maybe I'm just not satisfied, and maybe someone from the city can help us a little bit more about the instance when the snowbanks are starting to encroach, and there's a bike lane there, and that's the only place you can really park. That's an operational consideration. I mean, are folks going to be in the perfect world, we'll plow to the curb. That just doesn't happen, though. It just doesn't happen. So how are we making allowances for that?
My understanding, and I can. Do you want to answer or? Yeah. Okay. Well,
Mr. Wirtjes.
Mr. Chair, in plowing in the city, I think we're all aware that we try to get as close to the curb as possible, but that results in snowbank and snow in the street. And thus the cars parked at the edge are always inching into the travel lane. Whether that travel lane is a motorized mixed-use travel lane or whether it's a bike lane, there's always some inching into it. And so that's going to happen irregardless of the lane type. For the bicycle lane here and this specific subject, in Minneapolis, we would continue to monitor those locations. We have not gotten into a situation in the past, even with our large comprehensive snow several years ago, where we were out there having to ban parking or restrict parking as the cars moved into the travel lanes accordingly. And so we worked with that. We monitor that in order to make it safe for operating purposes, both for the motorized and the non-motorized vehicles. And even within the, I can't even remember if we've ever written a parking ticket for somebody parking out because of the snowbank. So.
Okay.
Is that, Mr. Chair, does that answer your question?
Well, I'm not sure. But I'll accept it for now. But I'll reserve the right to think about it a little bit. Because the law is going to be written quite clearly. So it's going to say, no person shall stop, stand, or park a vehicle except when necessary to avoid conflict with other traffic or in compliance with the directions of a police officer or traffic control device in any of the following places within a designated bicycle lane except when posted signs permit parking. I guess I can accept that because it does say in this list, I'm sure somewhere, I don't see it within the travel lane. Actually, my significant other got a ticket once. A previous significant other got a ticket once, stopping in the travel lane, waiting for me to run out and jump in the car. So I know that's in here somewhere. Anything further, members? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe just a comment, and I think maybe to Senator Pratt's point, every city is different, every circumstance is different, and we all kind of relate back to where we came from. But I can just almost believe in Rochester that except maybe on a parkway where there's no houses, that this would probably result in maybe the last there clearly I don't think would ever be another bike line in a residential area. I mean, you just wouldn't take that parking away from the residential neighborhoods, I don't think. And particularly even on streets where there is a fair amount of traffic, but there's also homes. Unless I'm misunderstanding the bill, I think you'd just see your last bike lane. But help me. Yeah. Senator, yes.
Senator Mr. Chair, no, this is not requiring bike lanes. And so for like in the city of Minneapolis, if we're going to put a bike lane on East Hennepin, that would require us to remove a lane of traffic. There would be city meetings and community meetings, and they'd have to find additional traffic. And so this isn't mandating that you put in a bike lane and that you can't park in that bike lane. This is if there is a marked bike lane versus right now the bikes can bike anywhere. And so right now they can bike in the street with parking there and moving. Now, this is if there is a marked bike lane, then it becomes no traffic. So there's a lot of streets where you may not have a official bike lane, or you might even have, I don't know what this does with Cheryl's, but if you have an official, if you don't have an official bike lane, then you can still park. And so my guess is you might be adding in bike lanes, and this is where you get into unless otherwise permitted, or a permit. Unless otherwise they put up a sign that says you can park there. So that is one option if if the city of Rochester was looking at putting in bike lanes but decided, we don't think we'll have that much parking or we'll think that we'll have that much traffic. They could specifically allow additional signs, and parking. This is just saying if it is a designated bike lane, then you can't park there. Does that help at all?
Well, maybe a little bit. So in a situation where you had a bike lane but you're going to allow traffic, you would put a sign up on a residential boulevard indicating that? Is that what you're kind of saying? Because I'm also apt to believe a lot of people maybe wouldn't even like that sign on their boulevard, in a meandering neighborhood. Where signage and residential style is important, but also, Ms. Chair, if you would,
Senator,
can you help me a little bit? How does this get tangled up in the complete streets thing, and that requirement? Although I don't think it's a requirement, but it's pretty close. Can you help me just a little bit because I haven't read that or statute for obviously a couple of years.
Well, Senator, complete streets is more of a process than a requirement. It's about working with the community on streets, once they're being constructed or substantially rehabbed. So it's not a requirement. There's nothing.
Sure, if you have a complete street ordinance, and some cities do, it seems to me that you'd have to the local community would just have to relook at that and find out if they really wanted it. I think.
Right. But even local complete streets ordinances don't mandate particular facilities. They mandate that we have a conversation about what makes sense with the local community. I'll let Senator Disick respond. The short version is, you just simply can't park in a bike lane. That's the upshot of this. Don't think it has much to do with signage. Bike lanes are already pretty well marked. Senator Disick.
I will let Mr. Wirtz answer the complete streets portion of the question.
Mr. Wirtjes.
Mr. Chair and Senators, I generally agree with Senator Dibble in your comment about the process. And so under that point, the complete streets would get you to a decision where the bike lane would be decided on whether the community wants it or doesn't want it in there. And if they do want it, then this provision, and they install it, then this provision would come into play, and then the parking would be restricted in the travel lane of the bike lane portion. And so that would be where this provision would come into play. I think this is also parallel to the bike lane being prohibited parking, parallel to, you know, just having a regular travel lane. There's generally an expectation that vehicles aren't going to stop in a travel lane in that regards. And so this is what we're trying to accomplish with the bicycle lane as well, is that there's some order and some organization and some understanding that this striped line on the pavement along with the signs isn't a parking area, but really is a traveling area for the bicyclist.
Senator Centrum.
That's fine.
Okay. Senator Peterson, Senator Franzen, and Senator Osmick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Kipmeyer.
And Mr. Chair, and really my question is probably for our staff in terms of the interpretation of this bill. Certainly we're talking about parking, and that's the impression everybody's getting. And to Senator Tomasoni's point about parking and the next bill, you know, clearly in this bill on line 1.6, we're calling out much more than parking. It's calling out for a person to not stop or stand, as well as parking, and there's a clear differentiation there. And so if we're truly concerned about parking, you know, this bill does much more than that for those pedestrians and vehicles that are stopping for some other reason on line 1.6 under the prohibitions.
Senator Dietzick.
So are you on Senate Bill 414?
I don't know.
It's on 414, line 1.6. I mean, that's current law, so we're not changing that.
Right, but if we're concerned about parking, that would be my point, is that maybe we should be deleting the stop and the stand part in this particular bill.
This section, though, deals with traffic regulations and not just bikes, I believe. So I'm pretty sure this is more than just, this is traffic regulation. So cars also have this. This is a rule that I believe cars also have. And then we just added on line 2.7 that cars cannot park in designated bike lanes.
So the interpretation here is that this is for all vehicles, not just for the bike lane then.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, so the interpretation here is that this is this, my understanding, this was just to apply to bike lanes in terms of the stop and the standing.
Senator Deason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is section 169 in the chapter is a traffic regulation. So I believe this is cars. So cars are not supposed to stop, stand, park on a sidewalk in front of a driveway within 10 feet of a fire hydrant. And then they're also on page 2.7, they're also not allowed now to park within a designated bike lane. So maybe the Senate Council can check, is this section 1.6934 relating to I believe it's traffic regulations.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dietzick, yes. Stop, stand, and park all refer to a vehicle, not necessarily a motor vehicle, but inclusive of motor vehicles and other vehicles. And actually stopping and standing are defined in our traffic regulations chapter.
What is stopping and what is standing?
Stopping is halting even momentarily of a vehicle, whether occupied or not, except when necessary to avoid conflict with other traffic or in compliance with the directions of a police officer or traffic control sign or signal. And standing is the halting of a vehicle, whether occupied or not, otherwise than temporarily, for the purpose of and while actually engaged in receiving or discharging passengers.
Okay. So, Senator Peterson.
So I think my point was is that this is going beyond just parking in the bike lane, and I'm not I think that addresses what Senator Tomasoni is getting at too, but I can't speak for him, and it's probably maybe going farther than
I think Senator Tomasoni was actually talking about the issues in Senate File 415, which is like down here when you're coming up to the turn off of John Ireland Boulevard onto Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and the bike lane is there, and then it's a dash line, and we'll get to that in a minute. Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Peterson, okay, I'm sorry, I think I'm now getting at what you're saying. So the city would prefer, the city of Minneapolis would prefer that we leave it as is, because if the pizza vehicle or the UPS truck, it's not just stopping like momentarily, it's stopping, and as Senator Dibble said, when his significant other was waiting to pick him up, and so that's also blocking that lane. Or the pizza truck is blocking the lane. So it's any blockage of the lane that would force the bike into the traffic lane. And so they would prefer to not take out the stop and standing, but they would prefer to just leave it in so that as it reads, a car could not stop, stand, or park a vehicle in a bike lane. Does that help?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Peterson.
Just so everybody understands, their pizza is going to get cold.
but Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Peterson, yeah. Only if you
Senator
live in a bike with the bike lane out in front of your thing. Mm-hmm. With no parking, because there are some streets, there are many streets where there is parking available. So it's parking, there's a parking lane and then a bike lane and then the traffic lane. So getting to what Senator Senham was saying earlier, depending on the width of the street, you could have a bike lane or parking a bike lane and two traffic lanes. I know in my community we have several residential streets where there just is not space to put in parking a actual bike lane and two traffic lanes on most of the residential streets. And so they're just assumed, and because bikes have the right to bike in the street now, it's just assumed that they, bike safely. But these are, I think, for on some of your busier roads where you put in actual bike lanes.
Thank you. All right, getting to the list. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dietzick. While I support the goal of your bill, my concern is what are local cities, how would this interact with local cities' ordinances, to Senator Sendem's point. For instance, in the city of Edina, I know we just did a bike lane within the regular car lane, so we would be violating most likely this law if it was passed, because you would stop and stall or stand at points, because the lane is literally on. I mean, it's a different model. It's actually confusing a lot of our residents.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm Senator Franzen. So is that like a Cheryl, I think they're called?
I think so.
Yeah, so you have, but that would be like, you can't, in the normal flow of traffic, you stop and at stop signs and you stop it like that. So that would just be as the normal flow of traffic. They would just go on like any car does. In those lanes, a car could not park there either, because they would be blocking traffic during Cheryl Lane.
Chair,
Senator France.
Senator Dietzick, potentially, but I still have concerns of how it would impact different cities, because I know that cities are very active on park on different lanes and incorporating lanes. I know at least cities I represent are really active in trying to incorporate more bike lanes. So my concern would be that cities would be impacted in one way that we might not know yet, because they are taking the lead on this, and I just want to get their input and see if they're on board. So I don't know if you have cities backing this bill up and other organizations that can help me know that this is something that's supported.
Yep. Mr. Chair, Senator Franzen, yes, the League of Minnesota Cities and Metro Cities do support the bill, and so note here. So Edina does have advisory groups, and so I believe, and assuming that they have talked to the League of Cities and Metro Cities. Thanks.
Thank you.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification point, and maybe to counsel, and maybe to the author. just so I understand, if we did adopt this language, then if a jurisdiction decided to put in a bike lane, no parking next to the between the bike lane and the curb, they would paint, they would put down the paint, they would put up whatever appropriate signage there is, and any car, any vehicle that parks in that lane, regardless of the fact, I mean, there will be no signs that indicate this is parking is illegal if you park in the bike lane. There is going to be no signage, there's going to be no warning, there's going to be no advisory to the motorist that they can't park in the bike lane. Is that correct?
Senator Dietzick, or, well, I don't know if council can answer that or not.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burchis said he could answer that.
Mr. Chair and Senator, generally the answer to your question would be yes. There would not be additional signage. The signage that you would have out there, just like you said, is be the striping on the pavement for the bike lane and then the appropriate bike lane sign. And so most cities would not go out and further sign it to say no parking. They could, but they wouldn't necessarily maybe go through that effort to add the additional no stop standing or parking.
Right.
Senator Osmond.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. So that's one of the concerns I have is we're now changing something and cities are going to be able to, I mean, you're going to be tagging people and they have no warning that this is actually taking place. And finally, a comment to what Senator Pratt indicated, cities do have that jurisdictional control. We have changed in my city in my 11 years. We changed parking all over the place to the concern of residents who came and voiced their dissent as far as what parking changes we went. But certainly, to your point, Senator Pratt, you're correct. They have jurisdictional authority to make these changes on their own, on their individual cities, and they would have to sign what they were actually doing.
Thank you. I have Senator Kiffmeyer, Miller, and then Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I think
Senator Dietzick.
Senator Wirtges has a comment on that.
One more.
Senator Wirtges, or Mr. Wirtges.
Mr. Chair, I would note to the senator that the other 14 items on this list also don't require you to put up a sign, no parking. So we've got that same challenge in trying to educate our public about all these other things on here.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question has to do with when I read the bill, line 216 talks about you can only be in that bicycle lane, you can't drive in it, except to perform parking maneuvers. On the other hand, when you read on the next page, it talks about first signaling.
We're still on 414.
And that's 415.
And that's 415.
Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Chairman, right. I got ahead of it.
Right.
Thank you.
You and Student Senator Tomasoni can pre-conference 415.
Okay.
He was working off 415 before, too.
Okay.
All right, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dietzick, I agree with the concept of this. What I'm struggling with is in the communities that I represent, specifically Winona, a college community, parking is a major issue already. And I know that the state or the city of Winona was successful in getting some SHIP funds. I think that's the state health improvement program, if that's correct. And one of the things that the city of Winona did with those dollars is they painted bike lanes. But if there's a car parked, that's parked on top of that bike lane. And parking is very precious, especially in the college communities. So I'm an avid biker myself. I like the concept, but I can tell you that this will not work in Winona and several other the smaller communities that I represent. And the other issue that I'm having is the roads are – streets are pretty narrow already in a lot of the communities that I represent. So I would be more for allowing our local communities to make that decision, and I don't know if there's a way we can put that into legislation or not, but Mr. Chair, I think this is a local control issue, and if our communities want to pass something like this, I think they should be able to do so, but I don't think we should mandate at the state level that this has to be done, And the other concern I have is, I think Senator Osmick's point, in Winona, we'd either have to paint the curb yellow or put up signs, do something so residents knew that they couldn't park in those parking spots that, are, again, are in high demand as it is. So, again, if we can make it more of a local control, I'd be very supportive. I'm supportive of the overall concept, but as written, I don't believe it would work in the communities that I represent.
Thank you. Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Miller. And the U, the area that I represent, there also is no parking, and so that's why a lot of people do bike. And in my area, and this gets to some of the concerns and questions, when we put in a bike lane in Minneapolis and it touches traffic or parking at all, there's community meeting after community meeting, just to, especially if we are moving a parking lane, because it is such a tough issue, and especially if it's in a heavy quarter where there's businesses, because they don't want to lose their parking. So I appreciate that. It is very tough. And across the street from me, where we had an old school, that the bus traffic is no longer there, they put in a bike lane, and they actually, again, had a neighborhood meeting and a lot of it did take a lot of notification and put up actually temporary signs to tell people this is now a bike lane, no lane, no parking. And so some of the reason I think we did bring this forward this way is so there is some consistency across, at least in the metro area where people are driving in, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Edina really quick. It's not further down the road, and so that there is some consistency. But I do appreciate the I understand how narrow some roads are, and fitting in an actual bike lane and parking sometimes is hard.
Follow Senator Miller. Mr. Chair, I'd be all for limiting this to the 7-county metro area. If we're going to move forward, I'd even offer that as a verbal amendment if we're planning to do that, because again, it'd be very difficult to do in greater Minnesota. Sometimes we refer to it as better Minnesota.
Senator Tomasoni.
Better Minnesota. I like that. thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's for either the witnesses. And I missed your testimony, so I apologize if you already answered this, but are bicycles crashing into pizza delivery trucks, or what's going on
here? So, Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, that would be bad.
What's going on in Northeast Minneapolis?
No, I'm just wondering why. What's the necessity? It just seems like...
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, there are a lot of, because of just the mix of cars and bikes and pedestrians and trucks and buses, we've had several fatalities lately. There was one in my area over by the university where a U student I think it was a garbage truck, because she was just in his blind spot, and she was killed. And so just there is a big mix of where people are, people in cars and bikes. It is a dangerous mix. So in greater Minnesota, greater Minnesota, where you might have some car crashes based on road conditions and speeds, we don't really have, well, not always, but on some of the local roads, we don't have speed issues always, but it is just cars and traffic, and it's a mix. And so if we can, and if there's space and the community decides they want to put a bike lane there, with the increased amount of bike traffic, it's just a safety issue.
But Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dietzick, that's sort of taken care of in the law already, because I'm assuming the garbage truck was moving over to pick up garbage and didn't see the bicyclist coming, who then bicycled up alongside of the truck and got hit. I'm just wondering, this is about stopping, isn't it? Stopping in the bike lane and for a short period of time to deliver a pizza or to drop off a passenger or something like that. And so I'm just wondering if we've had problems as a result if something has happened that is bringing this particular legislation forward.
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, the stopping and standing and parking, it's mostly a parking is the issue. So the bigger issue is parking in a bike lane. It's just falling under something where it prohibits stopping, standing, or parking a vehicle. So,
Senator Tomasoni, I'll just tell you as someone.
Parking? Are they double parking in Minneapolis on the bike lanes? Is that's what's happening? Or?
Correct. It depends on where the bike lane is.
That's already illegal, too.
Typically,
right?
Correct. But it's also it depends on the configuration, of course. The issue is the same because, you know, whether the car is parked for 3 hours or 30 seconds, bicyclist is coming up and has to swerve around the vehicle, go out into the general purpose traffic, sometimes not seen very well, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, there's a bicyclist there, car coming along, you know, and then bam, they hit each other. So whether it's the UPS guy or, you know, someone who has parked their car and they're down at the local coffee shop, the issue is the same at that moment. You know, and it's simply I think what this bill attempts to do is to say, you know, we went through the trouble of designating a bike lane so that bicyclists could travel down this particular street in between these two lines safely.
Well, I get that.
And it defeats the whole purpose of the bike lane when cars are just sitting there in the middle of the bike lane for safety purposes.
They don't really park in the bike lane where they're going to park. I mean, they park there for a moment to do something and then leave. Because aren't the bike lanes alongside of parking spots?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, not always. There are some places, like across the street from me, where they just removed the parking. It was actually in front of a school, and so you had buses there, and now the people coming to the school don't have as many buses, and so they just got rid of that parking lane for buses because it was no parking anyway. And so there are some lanes where there's not parking, and then a bike lane because of the width of the street. It is usually bike lane, traffic, bike lane, parking. So there might be parking on just one side of the street. And so on the other side of the street where you have just the bike lane, that's the one where you run into the issue of their parking.
So Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzick, what do you think of Senator Miller's suggestion of the 7-county metro area?
Are we still on
414? I see Senator Pratt shaking his head.
I live in the 7-county metro area, so I...
Four counties?
Well, yeah. Mr. Chair... I'm just, we have one city here, City of Minneapolis. I'm wondering if we just do, well, my question in the City of Minneapolis is can you do this now with your local control ability? I mean, there are several of us around the table that have concerns about this.
I will mention that Senator Dietzick did indicate that the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities have endorsed this bill or supported.
Are they here to tell us which cities told them that they're supportive? Because, Mr. Chair, I know I haven't heard from my cities, and just talking to other members around the table, there are a lot of concerns about this this legislation. So I'm just my question to the City of Minneapolis is, can you do this now? And if not, what can we do to empower you to do this in the City of Minneapolis?
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, I think do you want to answer that?
Mr. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I guess a couple of issues in revolving around Senator Miller's question. I guess, first of all, we've had some discussions with our city attorneys, and they have given us some advice that we probably don't have the exercise that you would hope we do in that regards. The other aspect that this law does provide us, or the proposed law that provide us, is right now we don't have an ability to ticket someone because we don't have an explicit statement here about a no parking unless we put up the no parking sign. And so the effort around this would be fairly wholesale, which would be we'd have to put up no parking signs, not only for the bike lane, but for everything else on this list. And I don't think you and your cities want to do this either. We don't want to do this. And so every driveway, I've got to put up a no parking sign. Every crosswalk, I got to put up a no parking sign. And so that's not our desire in order to deal with this.
Senator Miller.
Mr. Chair, I can't speak for other members in their districts, but I know in the district that I represent, we don't have issues with people parking in crosswalks or in front of driveways or on sidewalks. Maybe if there's a parade going on or a special event. My question for council is, if this bill were to pass and communities do not want this, I mean, this becomes state law, so every community would have to abide by this. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, yes, that's correct.
All right, getting back to the list, Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Well, Senator Miller, I, you know, being part of the Seven County Metro, I think we've got enough variance with even within the Metro where this sounds like it's primarily a Minneapolis-St. Paul issue. It sounds like it is, I agree with Senator Miller. I've seen parking tickets by parking too close to a fire hydrant, by parking too close to an intersection. So I'm going to disagree with your assessment that without this being in state law, we can't ticket all these others because I've seen them done. I think we need to allow local communities to define where parking should be and parking shouldn't. We need to allow local communities to define where bike lanes can and can't be. And so it just, and like we just said and the point was made, we're here to make state law, not city or regional law, and it doesn't seem to work throughout the state. And as council said, cities have the ordinance, have the ability to establish parking and no parking ordinances. You say it's going to be expensive to sign these no parking areas. It's going to be expensive for other cities to sign parking allowed areas or to stripe and paint. And so I would, Senator Dietzick, I appreciate what you're trying to do. If there's a way to make this work and still maintain local control, I could be supportive of it, but I can't think of a way to amend it, and I can't support it as it is.
Senator Dietzick. Okay.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pratt. At first, part of the reason that you've seen the tickets at the hydrants and that is because it is in state law, and so there's that. And then this is not saying you have to put in bike lanes. This is just saying if you put in a bike lane, that you can't park in a bike lane. But I appreciate, I'm totally for local control. And so part of this is just, and it is, and I will admit, this is a bigger issue in the Metro and especially college areas because there is, we have lack of parking and we do have a lot of people biking. But part of this was bringing forward today was just to start this discussion because I think as more and more people are biking and we have a younger population that is biking more, I think this may spread into more than just Minneapolis-St. Paul. It might not spread all the way up to an issue in Virginia, but it is. It may spread into the Seven County Metro. And so I think this is something that we need to start thinking about in the future because it is more of a mode of transportation and not just recreation.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your point, Senator Dietzick, about going down the list and what's ticketable and not, I look a little further down the list and look at crosswalks. And I think there used to be a much less of a sensitivity and awareness of the importance of crosswalks, particularly with cutouts for accessibility. And we have changed our mindset about that. We changed the laws, and people have had a greater sensitivity that we do need to make some of these exceptions for safety reasons. And I'm thinking about my own communities in the East Metro and trying to think, you know, ooh, where are their bike lanes? Would this be a problem? And I think part of it is saying if we're going to commit to bike lanes and make this accessible and safe for bikers, we need to make it safe. And so I understand the concerns and the challenges in the different areas, but I do wonder, when you think about some of the different areas we're talking about, are there actually bike lanes there? You know, I mean, in Woodbury, there neighborhood streets where there are no bike lanes, but you don't need them because it's not the kind of streets where there's a traffic concern. Where there are bike lanes, there's no parking on the side of that street anyway because that would be unsafe for all kinds of traffic. So I guess I'm just wondering if we need to be saying this safety for bikers needs to be something that is understood from community to community if there's a bike lane there. And don't put a bike lane in if that's not needed, or if parking is needed instead, and that's the local control. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Senator Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for council. Is there a way? I am going to offer an oral amendment, but before I do that, question for council: is there a way that we can incorporate a local control portion into this bill, so if local communities want to make that decision locally, so we can empower the city of Minneapolis to make that decision if they wish. Is there a way for us to do that?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, I guess it, I'd have to know more. I think I heard somebody say that the city of Minneapolis attorneys had said that Minneapolis could not adopt that ordinance, or did I hear wrong? I mean, as I read the state law, they already have the power to do that. And so it isn't necessary to restate it in this section.
So, Ms. Berezovsky, if the city of Minneapolis were to do so on its own initiative, could they also ticket for the offense?
City ordinance.
Yes, Mr. Chair. They could ticket for a violation.
Okay.
And
as far as I know, I mean, I would like to know more about the other advice that somebody had mentioned. But
and Mr. Chair or Senator Deason,
Senator Miller,
what's your plan for this bill? Are we planning to move it today, or are you going to hold it over for possible inclusion, or what's your plan?
We can do, I'll follow Senator Dietzick's advice and her lead. We can hold it over. We're going to have an omnibus policy bill. We can spend some time working on this language, or we can try to move it on.
Mr. Chair, I didn't have any preset ideas because I knew there would be a omnibus transportation right. bill, so I'm fine with including that
okay.
in that and laying it over and continue discussing it.
Why don't I suggest we do that? Senator Tomasoni.
I'm not sure what your oral amendment is going to be, but Senator Dietzick, if the city of Minneapolis thinks they need our approval to be able to do this, why don't we just make this bill specific to the city of Minneapolis?
Mr. Chair, and
Senator
Tomasoni, that's my oral amendment will accomplish that, I think.
Senator Osmick.
To Senator Miller and Senator Tomasoni, here's the problem, is if you put this in the statute, it does not require them to signage it. It doesn't require them to do anything. It's going to be in statute. So what you're going to have is one rule specifically that says for Minneapolis, this rule applies. They don't put signs up. And then every place else, you'd have to put signs up to do it. So if you were in Prior Lake, the rule didn't apply. If you were in Minneapolis, the rule does apply, and there's no signage differentials. So there, you're going to have two competing laws that you can get picked up for off the same action. So, and also to Senator Miller, I'm sorry if we're going to do this. My city is. I don't want this in my district any more than you want this in your district. So I'm sorry. Don't add the Seven County Metro area and say we want
we're
that.
Mr. Chair, we're going to accomplish that as well.
Senator Miller. All right, Senator Miller, would you like to offer your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to offer an oral amendment on line 2.7 after the word lane. Insert that is located within the county of Hennepin.
There you go.
And then we're going to add after 2.16, Senate Council tells me that we're going to add an effective date. This section is effective on August 1st, 2013. And applies to the county of Hennepin.
Okay.
So point of clarification,
Senator Osmick.
You're just hitting Hennepin. You're not hitting Ramsey, Dakota, Washington, and the rest of the fan club?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, that is my oral amendment. If anyone would like to amend the oral amendment, they're certainly welcome to do so.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Miller, it does include Edina. It does include a lot of our cities here, so that's I need to really understand how this would impact the communities that I represent, Bloomington, Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, so I want to make sure that they're okay with this before I support it.
Senator Miller.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to think.
City of Minneapolis.
And I don't know. I'd like to ask the council. I mean, can we specifically do it for the city of Minneapolis?
Feel good.
Here's off.
My concern is our council's telling us that we can already do it, but the city of Minneapolis is saying that they can't. So I'm certainly open to the will of the committee, but I don't want this in greater Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, I can appreciate that. This gets back to some of the consistency issues, and so where it's hard for car drivers and bikers both alike to know, well, okay, did I cross the county line, and so does this work or not? And so I haven't talked to my city, but I mean, this might be better to just table and to continue working on it. And I appreciate all the time that this, and it's kind of shows how we're getting into this new area, and it is a complicated issue. And so, and there's all these just, you know, little things that need to be addressed.
Yeah. Senator Miller, I actually don't support your amendments because I actually believe that we should have uniformity throughout the state. I think we should do this. I think we should have uniformity throughout the state. I think what's at the core, at the root of this discussion, is whether or not bikes should be recognized as a you know, fully equal user of the city streets, especially in those spots where we have designated bike lanes. Clearly, there's a difference of view on that bikes are kind of, you know, we can just kind of treat them however, doesn't matter. You know, we can block their passage where we wouldn't even dream of doing the same thing for cars, and we can put bikes in fairly precarious circumstances, as evidenced by our report. I think the message to the city of Minneapolis and the bicycling advocacy community is we got to get to work here and talk to members of this committee and our local communities to argue that, you know, bicycling isn't just simply an optional form of transportation on our city streets, that it's a form of transportation that we need to deal with in our laws and in our engineering. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with you. I don't disagree, but it's not as big of an issue in some of our communities as it is in the city of Minneapolis, and that's pretty clear. So what I'd like to do is withdraw my amendment and move to table the bill.
Well, Senator Miller, I don't think we need a motion to table the bill. I think the chair will just table the bill for possible inclusion in a future omnibus transportation
policy bill. Well, Mr. Chair,
policy bill.
Question to that. Mm-hmm. Will we have an opportunity to discuss the bill then before it gets included so we can continue work on it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So moving on, Senate File 414 has been tabled for possible inclusion and for certain discussion at a future point in time. Senator D6, Senate File 415. We have some foreshadowed questions already on 415.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will state what I said earlier, that I do understand this is not the most pressing issue you will hear, and it is really not a pressing issue in a lot of areas. But, again, in certain areas, especially in my area and other parts of the city where you do have a lot of people doing bikes, it is a big deal. Senate File 415, this bill clarifies when a car can move into a bike lane. In Section 1, will now prohibit cars from entering a bike lane to pass another vehicle on the right. So you can't enter a bike lane to go around a vehicle. Section 2 prohibits cars from driving in a bike lane unless they are maneuvering in order to park. And so this is if you have a parking lane and then a bike lane and then other traffic lanes, you can cross over into that bike lane to, you know, either parallel park or to park. So that's what Section 2 is dealing with. Section 3 states the proper and legal way to enter a bike lane to make a right turn. And this is what Senator Tomasoni was talking about earlier. When you go out there, you'll notice there's the lane of traffic, and then there's the bike lane. And as you approach the intersection, thank you, I don't know if it's Rice Street, you kind of notice that before you get to the intersection, the solid line switches to dash lines. And that is where you can legally enter into that lane, and you would do it just like if you were merging into another lane of traffic. You kind of, you know, make sure there's no cars, or in this case, bikes behind you, and so, you know, you legally enter that lane and then make your right turn. So that's kind of describes what that looks like. Again, the League of Cities and Metro City supports this, and MnDOT does not have any objections. So are there any questions on this bill?
Thank you. Questions, members? All right. See activity at the table. Mr. Wirtjes.
Mr. Chair, I just maybe add a few comments to Senator Dietzick's point here. I think these changes on this Senate File 415 are really about further clarification about when you should be in the bicycle lane and when you shouldn't be. And I think that really arcs back to the Minnesota Driver's Manual, where the language is a little bit more clear, and we're kind of using some of that language here in the statute, especially related to turning at intersections. It also elaborates further on the passing on the right circumstance and how that can be a dangerous situation, whether that's in a bike lane or otherwise. And then lastly, I think it further clarifies this issue about you can occupy the bike lane in order to make your parking maneuvers and not to park, which was a little bit cumbersome in the language here as well. So I think it's really about further clarification of the laws that we already have. So I don't believe this is cutting new direction here on this.
All right, Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dietzick, just again, I want to clarify, would it impact the street that I described earlier when you do have the bike lane within the actual driving lane? You have to use it. There's no other option. So how would that affect that situation? Just want to make clear.
Mr. Wirtjes.
Mr. Chair and Senator Franzen, I think what you're talking about is your advisory bike lane, if I remember correctly.
On Wooddale Avenue.
Yes,
and it's new. It's brand
new.
Yeah,
it's fairly new. And for other members of the committee, what the senator is talking about is a primarily a two-lane roadway with a skip dash edge marking for the bike lane, and the cars and the bikes kind of share the one half of the roadway in each direction. And so there's this sharing aspect that's going on, and when the bicyclist is riding down the road, they're riding in this skip dashed area between that and parking or that and the edge of the roadway. And when the car comes upon the biker, they need to go around the bicyclist. So it kind of further helps clarify that. And so in this context, when the bicycle is not there in the, riding in the lane, the motorized vehicle could use the entire lane, you know, where the skip dash is and isn't. So that's the intended purpose.
Can we make, Mr. Chair?
Senator Franz.
Can we make a clarification in this language just because I know it's a pilot in Edina, and I want to make sure that if other cities want to go that route, and I don't know, don't want to hinder that and or the ability to do that in the future if that's the options that local cities have.
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, I think, Mr. Murphy, did you want to go more into the advisory lane that's in Edina?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I was just mentioning to Senator Dietzick that there are, and you alluded to this when you were just talking, mm-hmm. there are only two situations of this in the state right now, one on Wooddale in Edina and then the other on East 14th Street in Minneapolis. So it's definitely a more unique pilot sort of situation.
So to answer Senator Franzen's question, how would this bill interact with that situation, or do we need to clarify further so it doesn't impact negatively what they're trying to accomplish?
Mr. Chair and Senator Franzen, because of the way the street is striped with the skip dash, these provisions should not affect that. It's really about the solid line in that regards. And so as Senator Dietzick originally stated here at the intersection, the solid line is what kind of prevents you from or supposedly prevent you from getting into the bike lane. When it's skip dashed, you have the flexibility with which to cross that line, just like you do with a motor vehicle. The skip dash has the same implication.
All right, Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzick, could there be an option, a situation where they would change that skipped line to a striped line, a solid line? I just want to make sure that doesn't interfere now or in the future if that's the case. If for whatever reason they change it to a solid line in a different color, this would also probably prevent that.
Mr. Wirtjes.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not quite tracking the senator's question.
I'll try to clarify. That wasn't very articulate. But basically, if this pilot was to change in form and the stripe line becomes solid for whatever reason and of a different color, I just don't know how it would look in the future. Since it's a pilot, I don't know how it will permanently look. So I just don't want that to be an issue in the future. So I think you're just having a caveat that exemption, if you will, perhaps, if you would contemplate doing that, just to make sure that we don't have, that's clear that these type of lanes won't be affected.
Mr. Chair, I think I understand the senator's question. If the city of Edina decides to change the advisory bike lane and make it, I'll say, permanent in another way, they'd be following these same rules in the same manner. And so they've sort of, and so has Minneapolis, created the kind of a unique little trial experiment here in order to gauge that. And so I don't think their choices going forward today that exist out there would be influenced by these changes that we're proposing today. So it'd either be a bike lane or it wouldn't be a bike lane.
Mr. Wirtjes and Senator Disick, we might need to do a little bit more work on this bill as well. I'll just read the definition of bicycle lane, which really doesn't distinguish between striped or solid lines. It says a bicycle lane means a portion of a roadway or shoulder designed for exclusive or preferential use by persons using bicycles. Bicycle lanes are to be distinguished from the portion of the roadway or shoulder used for motor vehicle traffic by physical barrier, striping, marking, or other similar device. So we might need to adjust the definition of bicycle lane or create some additional language to Senator Franzen's point in this bill, which I don't think we're equipped to do today. Senator Dietzick or Senator Franzen.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I had a quick question, but I felt like, you know, there was a little frustration in your comments after the last bill. And I hope that no members of the committee or you, Chairman, or any residents in the state take this discussion as any kind of detrimental attitude toward bicycles, because that's not the case. I think even the Minneapolis study demonstrates that bicyclists and motorists have an equal share in these accidents. In fact, it's basically 50-50. They're both equally contributing to these crashes. And I would say the frustrations motorists have are caused by bicyclists not obeying the traffic laws. And that's really what relates to my question, you know, in relate to this bill in Section 3. Right now in the city of Minneapolis, if a bicycle would cross a lane of traffic without signaling their intentions, a left turn, right turn, would they receive a same ticket that you're looking to have this a motorist receive for crossing a bike lane?
Mr. Chair, if there was a police officer there, yes, they could. And I agree with you. I think there, and I'm not taking this as any negativity against the biking community, because I think this is something, this is what I said before, this is part of a discussion that as we move forward and more people are biking, we need to do that. And I know the bike advocates, at least in my community, are having the discussion amongst themselves and in letting other members in their community know you need to follow the rules like everybody else, and that on this crash rate, as the city talks more and more about this study on how a lot of these crashes, it is 50-50, and there's bikers at fault, and there are inattentive drivers at fault. And so a lot of this is just a safety message to everybody. Pay attention when you're driving, pay attention when you're biking. But it is my understanding, and I will confirm that with Mr. Wirtjes, but it is my understanding that bikers, because they have the same rights and responsibilities as a driver, if they are biking on the road, they could be ticketed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's what Senator I was Peterson. Hoping to confirm for the members of the committee. I do think this second bill is a matter of fairness, and I think it's a good idea, and I think you'll eventually see it included after the work that you're talking about. I think it's important to point out that those bicyclists can get the same ticket as motorists can, and they should expect to get that when they disobey those laws. So,
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Peterson, and I do know I have a friend who was given a speeding ticket on a bike, so.
Right, perfect.
they can get them. It wasn't
Dietzick,
me.
Senator Dietzick, you say a speeding ticket?
Yes.
How fast were they going?
Well, they weren't going 30 miles an hour, and they were ticketed for maybe, I think they were going 15 and so on. Some of those parkways,
oh,
they were
the parkways,
considered
yeah.
It was, they were biking too fast.
Right, right.
Need something to do.
Senator,
Mr. Chair?
I had a Senator Carlson and Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzick, one of the things that I want to be sure that I understand this completely, the title of the bill, or description of the bill says driving in a designated bicycle lane, but then in Section 1, where it does say driving in a bicycle lane, it doesn't use the term designated, and is it somewhere else in this act that or in the law here that assumes that we're talking about bicycle lane in subdivision 1 item 4?
So I'm sorry, Senator Carlson, are you referring to line 1.19?
Correct, 1.19. Yes.
Okay. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, it just relates back to the definition in Chapter 169 of bicycle lane, and that does require that bicycle lane has to be distinguished from the roadway or shoulder from the portion of the roadway or shoulder used for motor vehicle traffic by physical barrier, striping, marking, or other device.
Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Ms. Berezovsky, so we don't need to repeat it in this particular clause like we do in, I think we did that, well, in another place we did repeat that it was a designated bicycle lane. So, I mean, I just wanted to be comfortable that this is designated, it's not assumed.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Berezovsky.
And Senator Carlson. Anytime that the phrase bicycle lane is used in Chapter 169, unless a different definition is provided, it relates back to the definition that I read. So it isn't necessary to repeat it.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I think Section 2 and 3 are fine. I'm looking at Section 1, and I'm thinking is that when you look at 1, 2, and 3, when a vehicle, it's okay to pass on the right when the vehicle overtaken is making or about to make a left turn. As long as you're not in a lineup of cars making a left turn, you should be at the end of the bicycle lane where the dotted marks are. You should be able to drive into that, but I don't know if this means you can't. In going around a car, so it does the bicycle lane apply to number 1 and number 2 and number 3? Because if it does, then I think it makes the whole thing different here, because if I'm going toward the Kelly Inn again and there's a car making a left turn at that intersection, but there's 3 cars making a left turn at that intersection, and I have room to pull out into the bicycle lane to pass them on the right, is this legal or illegal to do it? I'm just wondering, can I do it where the dotted lines are, but I can't do it where the solid line is, or how is this interpreted?
Excellent question. I don't know the answer.
I don't know that either.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Osmond.
It's already illegal to pass on the right unless it is a marked lane. I think legal counsel would probably be able to look at
it. I don't know. It says right here it's legal to do it when the vehicle overtaking is making or about to make a left turn upon a street or highway when unobstructive pavement not occupied by parked vehicles of sufficient width for 2 or more lines of moving traffic in each direction, upon a one-way street or upon any roadway in which traffic is restricted to one direction of movement where the roadway is free from obstructions and of sufficient width for 2 or more lines of vehicles. So in number 3, for example, mm-hmm. you could actually be in a spot where there's parking, and then there's a bicycle lane, and you're in this lane, and a car is turning left, and you have sufficient room to drive over the bicycle lane and into the parking area where there are no parked cars. So I, you know, I'm just thinking that maybe we should get rid of section one and just do section two and three.
Well, Senator Tomasoni, I understand your point. I don't know if I completely agree with it. You know, should you have to sit behind the stack of cars in the left-hand lane or even in the right-hand lane, or I guess the left-hand lane, instead of sneaking over to the right and slipping around the corner or not? I guess I don't know if I agree with that or not. However, I do strongly agree with cars not slipping over into a bike lane for the purpose of slipping past moving traffic, you know, passing on the right, using the bike lane to do that. I mean, they shouldn't be doing that anyways. So in any case, I think we're going to lay this bill over and work on it a little bit. That situation bears a little thought. Mr. Wirtjes.
Mr. Chair and Senators, further up in that same bill in line 2.15, where it explicitly says that the motor vehicle shall not drive in the bicycle lane, this addition about passing on the right is just further elaboration of that, is the intent here. And so not driving in the bike lane and passing are maybe be perceived by the public as two different things. And so I think our intention here was trying to clarify that point, just like the shoulder isn't intended to be a passing lane either.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, after reading through all of this, I was beginning to think, I don't know if I want to ride my bike in the cities. There might be signs or not signs. I'm not sure. And I'm like, well, you know what? And then I was thinking, but for cars, you know, it's okay. Well, then I read through this now, and I'm looking at all the car things, and I don't know if I want to drive my car in Twin Cities either.
You've been breaking the law for a long time.
Well, I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. Not only that, from what I'm reading here, there's several.
These apply statewide.
Pardon?
Senator Kiffmeyer, these laws all apply statewide, so you might not need to. You might not want to drive your car anywhere.
Sorry, yes, Mr. Chairman, that might suffice for your intents and purposes, and maybe that is a kind of goal here.
There we go.
Gotcha.
My
and
true
by the
intent.
Way, I've ridden 150 miles in 2 days. I enjoy
wow.
biking, so it's my first time. I didn't make it all the way because I had an old upright Schwinn. Mm. And didn't quite make it, but due to a doctor's order that told my husband he had to get a new bike for me, I made it the next year, and
right.
It's amazing how those equipment things work quite nicely, so thank you. But the big thing for me in this is kind of conflicting, such as Section 3, where it says that you can go in a bicycle lane prior to making a turn, but only after it's safe to do so, under Section B, Section 4, 3DA. However, on the previous page, no, that's just a joke, the general counsel will be trying to actually find it, and it wasn't. But that's what it kind of reads like to me. But on line 216, you can only do it if you're going to perform parking maneuvers. So I get a little bit concerned that even the sections kind of conflict with each other, or and I think we want to be clear. Maybe I just didn't read them right, but...
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, in line 2.17, it's already current law that a driver may drive into a bicycle lane in order to prepare for a turn as provided in 169.19 sub 1, which is the next, which is
okay.
Section 3 of the bill. So they are cross-referenced.
But, Mr. Chair, I do want to say that we want bicycle safety. I think we all agree to that. I also just want to be sure that any rules or things are workable and understandable by the folks that have to comply with them, whether on a bicycle or in a car or the law enforcement. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, anything further? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on either Senate File 414 or 415? No. All right, members. I think we will also lay Senate File 415 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation policy bill. Anything further from the committee? So we will next meet on Monday. We'll have Senator Peterson's bill. I'm expecting we'll have a lot of conversation about that. So that's the only bill we've scheduled for Monday. That doesn't mean we have to talk a lot about it. In case we might.
All the fun, Mr. Chairman.
But we'll also have Senator Reinert is going to have a slideshow and talk a little bit about the flooding up in Duluth and the transportation situation and MnDOT and everything that they did to recover from that crisis. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members. Please.